Hello and welcome to another episode of the Thorax podcast. I'm Kate Diarmaidi, social media editor for Thorax and intensive care registrar. Today I'm talking to Dr. Hayley Scott, who is a researcher at the University of Newcastle in Australia. Hayley's background is in nutrition and dietetics, and she has done a lot of work looking at obesity and asthma. She and her team recently published a systematic review and meta-analysis in Thorax on obesity, inflammation and asthma. Hi Hayley, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi Kate, thanks for having me.
I just wanted to start by talking more generally about obesity and asthma. What is the relationship between obesity and asthma?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, there's quite a lot of clinical evidence that suggests that obesity is associated with a more severe presentation of asthma. We also know that obesity doubles the risk of developing asthma. So there's quite a strong relationship there. So for example, there's some studies that show that obesity is associated with poorer lung function, with more severe asthma symptoms, with an increased risk of hospitalizations for asthma, and an increased risk of exacerbations in general. So we've got quite a clear clinical picture that you know, that obesity is worsening the presentation of asthma, but we're not quite sure of the mechanisms that are responsible driving that effect.
And I think I read that it's more common in women, obesity-related asthma. Do you know why that is?
Yeah, that's something that we're looking into. We aren't sure why. There's a few different possibilities. So one potential mechanism is to do with the way that women and men carry fat. It's quite different. So women tend to carry more fat around the hips, so around the glenoid area. And leptin, for example, that's an obesity-associated adipokine, that is more strongly associated with glenoid adiposity. So leptin levels are much higher in women with asthma. Another possibility is to do with sex hormone levels. So we know that obesity is associated with sex hormone abnormalities, and it's possible that it's sex hormones that could be influencing this relationship. So for example, we did a study where we found that there was an association between increased testosterone levels and a reduction in sputum neutrophils. And we also found that women on the contraceptive pill actually had significantly lower sputum neutrophils than women that weren't on the contraceptive pill. So it's an area that we're looking into more at the moment, but we're still just dipping our toes in. We're still not quite sure of what is driving this increased prevalence of obesity-associated asthma in women.
Is it possible to see that what sort of percentage of asthma or how much asthma within the population can be attributed to obesity? And are we seeing an increase in asthmatics in parallel with the increase in obesity?
Yeah, they've both been increasing in parallel for a good 30 or 40 years. So there's definitely something there. When you look at the prevalence of obesity, it's definitely increased in people with asthma. So for example, in Australia, about 30% of the general population is obese. When you look at asthma, it's up around 40%. But then when you're looking at severe asthma, it's actually 46% of severe asthmatics are obese. So it's definitely a relationship there, and it seems to be linked with more severe asthma.
And so you've touched on this already, but can you expand on why the relationship between asthma and obesity exists?
Yeah, well, there's been a few different mechanisms that have been proposed. So my research focuses on inflammation, so around the hypothesis that adipose tissue secretes adipokines and IL-6, which then goes into the circulation and increases, for example, CRP. And we hypothesize that this inflammation is then spilling over into the airways and causing an increase in airway inflammation. So obesity is actually associated with an innate immune dysfunction. So there's research that shows that obesity is associated with an increase in circulating neutrophils, as well as neutrophils within the adipose tissue vasculature. So you would expect it would be more likely to be affecting neutrophilic airway inflammation in the lungs as well. But we seem to be seeing a bit of a mixed pattern, which we're still trying to understand that a little bit better. So that's one of the hypotheses. It's to do with inflammation. There's research going on at the moment looking at metabolic abnormalities as a driver of obesity-associated asthma. So obviously in obesity, there's a higher proportion of patients that have insulin resistance. And we know that insulin resistance is associated with impairments in lung function. Again, trying to understand why that is. And there's also an increased risk of hypercholesterolemia. And we know that LDL cholesterol actually also has impacts on inflammation and can increase, for example, neutrophilic inflammation. And so looking more, I guess, at the metabolic abnormalities that are happening in obesity to see if maybe it's possibly some of these metabolic abnormalities rather than the excess adipose tissue, or maybe a combination of both, that is driving these inflammatory changes and other changes that we're seeing. Another hypothesis is looking at the mechanical effects of excess adipose tissue on the chest, obviously having restrictive effects on that. And then there's also research that's looking at these hormonal abnormalities, which we touched on before as well, in obesity, and linking that back with the sex differences that we're seeing. So they're probably the main hypotheses that are being looked at the moment in the area.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. I have never heard about any link between insulin resistance and airway inflammation. So that's...
Yeah. So it's to do with the NLRP3 inflammasome being activated, and then that can then go on to cause increased inflammation systemically and potentially in the airways. It's still very early days. So, you know, it's not set in stone, but that's sort of what, you know, what the working hypothesis is for that one.
You've mentioned a couple of times now about sputum neutrophils, and that's something that your systematic review looked at specifically, the difference between sputum neutrophils in obese and non-obese individuals. But I just wanted to talk about first, what's the normal pattern of airway inflammation that we see in asthmatics?
So it's obviously a mixture. So some patients will present with a neutrophilic pattern of airway inflammation. The more common one that, you know, has been looked at for quite a long time is your eosinophilic pattern of airway inflammation. Some patients will present with a mixed pattern of airway inflammation, so they'll have both neutrophilic and eosinophilic airway inflammation, and that tends to be a more severe presentation of asthma. But you also get patients that have what's called a porcy granulocytic pattern of airway inflammation, and in these patients they have normal levels of both sputum eosinophils and sputum neutrophils.
So it varies.
Yeah, it does.
Which is, again, is quite interesting, because I always think about asthma as being eosinophilic or part of that pattern of illness rather than neutrophils. Is it true then that neutrophils are more of a feature in patients with obesity and asthma? Is that true?
It seems to be true. So we found a 5% increase in neutrophils in obesity. I mean, it's only a small increase, and the clinical significance of that, we don't know. It could be potentially, if we were to then phenotype these patients separately or look at their participant attributes separately. So, for example, split them into looking at males and females separately, if we looked at age of diagnosis separately. So, you know, your early onset versus your late onset disease. So, for example, in early onset disease, we do tend to see more of that eosinophilic pattern of airway inflammation, and that holds true for both obese and non-obese patients. Whereas in your late onset asthma population, it tends to be more a neutrophilic or a porcy granulocytic pattern of airway inflammation that these patients have. So perhaps if we could then look at those groups separately, we might see stronger effects in terms of the sputum neutrophils, but that's an area of ongoing research and needs to be looked at in more detail.
Mm-hmm. And you said that you're not sure of the clinical significance of the increased neutrophils, but is there a way that this could potentially affect how we manage asthma in these patients?
Yeah, I mean, potentially. I mean, any airway inflammation isn't great. When we looked at, for example, in my original study I published in 2011, when we first recognised this increase in neutrophils in obesity, in that particular study it was about a 10% difference between groups. It was an older population that we were looking at. But one of the things that we noticed was that relationship was only significant in women. And what we did was we looked at patients as to whether they had a diagnosis of what's called neutrophilic asthma. So their sputum neutrophils were 61% or greater. And what we found was that obese women were three times more likely to have a neutrophilic asthma diagnosis compared to non-obese women. So that's quite a significant increase when you're splitting it up according to that. If you've got three times as many women being categorised as having that particular inflammatory phenotype of asthma, that's when it's becoming clinically important and something that needs to be intervened with.
Mm-hmm. One of the other things you mentioned was interleukin 5 or IL-5, and I think that also has a difference in expression between obese and non-obese patients. What's the significance of that?
Yeah, that was an interesting one. I wasn't expecting that one, but I think, well, it's something we still don't quite understand what's going on there, but we're seeing this increase in sputum IL-5, and we're also seeing this increase in submucosal eosinophils. So I don't know if it's somehow linked with that. In terms of sputum eosinophils, there was no difference between obese versus non-obese. And in fact, if anything, there was a trend towards the sputum eosinophils possibly being lower in obesity compared to non-obese participants. But yeah, in terms of the IL-5, it's potentially got something to do with these submucosal eosinophils. I'm not sure, but there's clearly some sort of inflammation going on there to do with the eosinophils, but it's something that needs to be investigated more in future studies, and something I don't want to hypothesize on at the moment because we're not sure.
Okay. I wasn't sure because there's something in your discussion maybe about that could potentially impact how we use biologic therapies because they target IL-5, so we might be giving them to the wrong people.
Exactly, yeah. So if you are looking at sputum eosinophils and they're lower in obesity, you've potentially got this increased IL-5, you've potentially also got this increased submucosal eosinophils. We're not sure of the clinical relevance of that in obesity though, so whether or not these patients need to be treated, I'm not sure, but I think it's definitely something that needs to be investigated because obviously we don't want to be withholding therapies from patients who might be benefiting from them. Another thing on that as well that I wanted to mention was the FeNO. So we actually saw that FeNO was lower in obese patients compared with non-obese patients. And when we looked a little bit more deeply, some of the studies show, for example, there's a correlation between sputum eosinophils and FeNO in non-obese patients. But when you look at the obese patients, FeNO and sputum eosinophils actually don't correlate. And so using FeNO to prescribe these biologic therapies might not be the most appropriate way to be prescribing therapies in obese patients because it doesn't necessarily relate to their eosinophil levels within the sputum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that was very interesting because if we are using FeNO to diagnose eosinophilic asthma and then missing obese patients who are more difficult to treat anyway, then that's obviously would be very bad. So you also looked at systemic inflammation. So I think we've talked about the airway inflammatory pattern, but I was wondering if you could talk about the inflammasome, which you mentioned earlier in obesity, and how you think that relates to asthma. And what you found in your systematic review?
Yeah, so we looked at systemic inflammation and we found, as expected, we found that IL-6 was increased in obese compared with non-obese asthmatics. We found that CRP was increased in obese versus non-obese asthmatics. Leptin was increased and adiponectin was lower in obesity. So they're all things that you would expect because that's very normal across the population in obesity for those markers to be altered in that way in obesity. One of the other things that we found was that blood neutrophil count was also increased in obesity compared with non-obese participants. So that sort of supports the effect, I suppose, of this inflammation spilling potentially from the adipose tissue in systemically and then going on to affect the airways. So in terms of the inflammasome, we didn't really have a whole lot of studies that looked at markers of the inflammasome. There was one that looked at IL-1 beta in sputum, and I believe that it was increased in obese patients with asthma compared with non-obese patients with asthma. So it's just a working hypothesis at this point that we know that adipose tissue activates the NLRP3 inflammasome, and this then goes on to have systemic inflammatory effects. And we're proposing that this is also impacting the airways as well in people with asthma. And there are some animal models that support this as well, that it's all operating within the airways. And the NLRP3 inflammasome seems to be associated with increases, for example, in eosinophilic inflammation, again, within the airway tissue itself. So it's all sort of coming together, but yeah, there's much more work to be done to confirm what's actually happening.
Is there any data, is there any evidence that obese patients with a higher CRP or a higher IL-6 have worse asthma?
Yeah, there are some studies that have looked at that. So, for example, there's research that suggests IL-6 is correlated with neutrophilic airway inflammation. There's also some research that suggests it might be associated with clinical asthma outcomes like lung function. So there's certainly evidence there. There was a weight loss study carried out a few years ago as a bariatric surgery where they measured IL-6 levels and found that a reduction in IL-6 was associated with clinical improvements in asthma outcomes following weight loss. So I think what that study was sort of concluding was that if you can modify systemic inflammation, which is driven by obesity, is that potentially going to improve asthma outcomes alone?
And I wanted to ask you about weight loss, actually, because I believe that you've made a weight loss program specifically for obese patients with asthma. Do you know about the effects of diet generally on asthma? Do we have any evidence for that?
Yeah, we've got a little bit of evidence. So we sort of approach the weight management of patients with asthma from a multi-pronged perspective, I suppose, because obesity is not just about the weight. It is to do with the excess adipose tissue, can potentially increase inflammation. But there's so many dietary components that we also know influence inflammation, as well as physical activity also influences inflammation. So, for example, we've done research that has shown that a high-fat meal significantly increases neutrophilic airway inflammation. So within 4 hours, these patients are having significant increases in their neutrophilic airway inflammation. And we're also finding that following this high-fat meal, their bronchodilator is wearing off much more quickly. So it's not lasting, any more than a couple of hours, they're back to their baseline lung function level. So it's suggesting, I suppose, if a patient has a chronically high-fat diet, then they're going to be getting these continual insults that's going to be increasing their airway inflammation, reducing the effectiveness of their bronchodilator medication. We've also done some work that's looked at fruits and vegetables. And we found, so what we did was we compared a high fruit and vegetable diet with a low fruit and vegetable diet. And what a high fruit and vegetable diet was actually following recommendations. So following recommended intakes of fruits and vegetables. And then the low fruit and vegetable diet was actually the median Australian intake of fruits and vegetables. So we were actually comparing recommendation versus actual. And what we found was in patients who consumed the recommended number of fruits and vegetables, within a 3-month period, they actually halved their risk of having an asthma exacerbation. So it's quite a significant reduction in having an asthma exacerbation with just mm-hmm. one dietary modification was having that effect.
So is that something you see in patients even of normal weight? So if they change their diet, you still get that effect? Wow, okay.
Yeah, so this was in a mixed cohort. So the interesting thing actually with our high-fat meal studies is that the effect of a high-fat meal on its own is actually blunted in the obese patients. So it's driven by these changes in these non-obese patients. And what we think that is potentially due to is because the obese participants within the study actually had higher levels of baseline fatty acid levels within their circulation. And so this, I guess, insult of having this one extra meal didn't affect their fatty acid levels to the same degree as a patient who had lower baseline levels. They had this bigger increase, and it seems to have driven a more pro-inflammatory response.
Mm-hmm. I think that's fascinating, because obviously I know that the guidelines are obviously if you are overweight and you have asthma, you should try to lose the weight. But I didn't realise the impact that diet could have, like outside of weight loss, on asthma control.
Yeah. So that's where the future studies really need to be looking, not just at the number on the scales. And that's, I think, where the field is moving in general anyway. But looking more at diet quality is mm-hmm. really important, and physical activity levels as well.
Can I ask, just sort of as we move towards the end now, what else are you researching at the moment, or what other studies are you doing?
Yeah, we're just about to start a personalised obesity management study, actually. So we've just opened recruitment, and what we'll be doing is randomising patients to what we've called the IDEAL program. And it's trying to test the IDEAL management approach for obesity-associated asthma. And what it's looking at is a really personalised approach to these patients. So we've got a dietitian who's going to be giving them personalised medical nutrition therapy, which is the standard care that dietitians do, but it makes sure that they're receiving personalised advice. And they're also going to be seeing a physiotherapist who's also going to be giving them a personalised physical activity program to fit in with their preferences and their lifestyle. So we'll be comparing that with a control group, and we'll be following them up over, they'll be doing the intervention for 4 months, and we'll follow them up mm-hmm. in 12 months. And hopefully we're going to see some really nice results where, you know, personalised intervention is going to really help asthma. But watch this mm-hmm. space.
Okay.
We'll be publishing that in a few years.
Awesome. Thank you so much for talking to us, Hayley.
My pleasure. I've really enjoyed chatting with you today, and thank you for the invitation.
You're very welcome. I enjoyed it. Thank you for listening to the Thorax podcast. We will be publishing regular podcasts about some of the best content from the journal. Please subscribe on your preferred platform to get it directly on your device each month. We'd also like to hear from you, so please get in touch through our social media channels. Thank you, and see you next month.